Audio of Gone West. Three narratives of after-death experiences, communicated through the mediumship of J. S. M. Ward, B.A. late scholar and freeman of Trinity Hall, Cambridge, from 1920. This document was prepared and formatted by Jeff Cutler, and the copyright is not reserved. It may be freely used for any purpose. Sydney, Australia, December 2009. Foreword, by Connor McDarry, Jr. Discussions concerning after-death states usually end by the well-known pronouncement that nobody ever came back to tell about them. In Gone West were the answer to this because Mr. J. S. M. Ward, the author, did just that. He visited the astral plane regularly, retained his consciousness while there, and his book is a fascinating record of his experiences among the so-called dead. He describes some of the dangers ever existing on the astral plane in the form of evil entities who endeavor to entice occupants, especially newcomers, to yield to the indulgence of liquor, sex, and other sensual vices in which they had participated while on Earth. These evil entities, who are as a rule former Earth inhabitants, urge all among whom they mingle to practice the obsession of mortals and thus help to swell the ranks of the forces of evil. On the other hand, Mr. Ward tells of the opportunities open for spiritual development and thus provides the reader with the necessary information to make the correct choice of companions and the paths to follow for his betterment. In this regard, the undersigned strongly urges the reader to direct his attention to the Officer Part 2. The following, in Mr. Ward's own words from the introduction of another work on the same subject, will serve to make his position clear. In giving this narrative to the general public, I have been actuated by the desire to bring comfort to others in a similar position of loss. I knew that the dead die not long before my brother died, but of the manner in which they live I knew only a little. Except for a brief account of the astral plane by W. A., and another rather specialized account by the officer, my knowledge related mainly to the spirit plane. Of the astral plane under war conditions I knew nothing. The interest Gone West aroused has been shown not merely by its sales, considerable as these have been, but by the large number of letters I have received, which have been of the greatest encouragement. Those of us who are endeavoring to spread the true knowledge of life beyond the grave, are doing so in the face of opposition alike from the ordinary man of the world and from the ministers of established religions. Sometimes we are laughed at, whilst at other times we are called necromancers. Some of our opponents even go so far as to hint that we are not quite sane, but this has always been the way in which new truths are received at first. Nevertheless, it may be of interest to my readers to know that I am a perfectly normal man, one who is earning his living in business and who has every day to deal with complex mundane matters. The fluctuations in the rate of exchange, sources of the raw materials of industry, the German methods of trade penetration, and trade statistics are a few of the subjects with which I am concerned, and on all of which I have written articles and issued reports which are readily taken by the trade journals. I assure my readers that, from the financial point of view, it pays far better for me to write two or three articles on openings for British trade in, say, South America, than it does to write such a book as this. I am not a medium plying for hire, as the daily papers would call it. And if you met me at dinner, unless I spoke of these things, you would find me no different from 100 other busy men of affairs. Why, then, should the critics suppose that my ordinary clear business mind fails me when I turn to investigate psychical phenomena, or think I should waste my time practicing a heartless fraud on my readers? After all, those are the alternatives. If I did not feel that the message these pages contain was not merely true, but of vital importance to us sorrow-laden world, be assured that I could not thus publicly reveal much which is absolutely sacred to my personal life. The later work from which this quote was taken, entitled A Subaltern in Spirit Land, scribes the passing of his mother and her arrival on the astral plane, this being the reason for the reference to his personal life. The undersigned has been a student of occult subjects for over 70 years, and I can honestly say that Gone West offers the best rendition of life on the astral plane that I have seen expressed in print. Those involved are performing a great public service in again making available this priceless knowledge so vital to the spiritual progress of humanity. Conor McDarry, Jr. August 3, 1974. Introduction. The manner in which these communications came to be received is plainly set forth in the book itself. They were due to the desire of H. J. L. to convey to me an account of life beyond the grave. He discovered that I was mediumistic, a fact of which I was unaware, although I have for many years been keenly interested in the occult. The methods employed in conveying the information contained in this book were twofold. I visions. The first of these was prophetic, and foretold H. J. L.S. death. The first one after his death was very vivid, though at first I thought it was a dream, but nevertheless wrote it down. As the visions continued regularly once a week on the day of the week on which H. J. L. died, Monday, I was compelled to alter my views. In particular, I noticed four chief differences. A. They were coherent throughout. One of the most unsatisfactory features of dreams is the incoherency. Scenes shift from place to place without any regular sequence. People do things they would never do on Earth, and the characters change before our eyes. These visions were real through and through, coherent and logical in their development and, moreover, took up the narrative where it left off the week before. B. A normal dream fades almost at once, and it is rarely the case that it can be remembered in its entirety a few hours later. The visions remained firmly impressed upon my mind until they were written down, which sometimes took a couple of days. Once they were written down, they would tend to merge into the general body of remembrances which every mortal carries in his brain. See, the information was not due to the conscious or subconscious mind, for much of it was in violent opposition to my preconceived ideas on the subject, and it was some time before I would accept them, though I do so now completely. D. These visions contained verifiable facts entirely unknown to me, which nevertheless proved to be true on investigation. Some of these facts were of a personal and private character, known only to the dead man and one living person, and the latter admitted their truth. Further, there were certain references which, to the writer, were unintelligible, but were recognized by the living person to whom they were related, as requested. The other communications were obtained by automatic writing. With the exception of the first two or three, I was in complete trance, and was quite ignorant of what was written until I became normal again. The possibility of their being the product of my conscious mind is thus eliminated. With regard to the subconscious self, I would like to take this opportunity of protesting that while I am prepared to admit that such a thing does exist, I nevertheless hold that in most cases the word is a bogey set up by scientists to explain phenomena which they are unable to explain by the ordinary material laws, and which they are unwilling to ascribe to spirit influences. Yet, accepting the subconscious self at its highest valuation, it will not explain the presence of information which was quite unknown to me, and which, on its being investigated by others, proved to be correct. As an example of this, but not the only example, the following may be noted as given by B. P. I am only going to give you the name of a friend I met in this city. He is a Baptist, not a Congregationalist. His name is Richard Gresham Barker, born October 20, 1807, was sheriff of Nottingham and a colliery manager at Babington, near Notts. He died June 21, 1892. His brother John was twice mayor of Nottingham. It was only after considerable search that Mr. K. was able to prove these facts to be correct, even to the minutest detail. But without devoting more space to these problems, for those who desire verifiable evidence may obtain it from any ordinary spiritualist society, let us turn to consider the matter given in these pages. The original plan of the work as arranged by H. J. L. was as follows. The astral plane, A, as seen by a bad man, viz. The officer, as seen by an average man of the world, viz. W. A. The spirit plane, divided into, 1, hell, or the realm of unbelief, related by the officer, 2, the realm of half-belief, related by H. J. L. 3. The realm of belief lacking in works, related by J. B. P. 4. The realm of belief shown forth in works, related by the monk. Owing to the enhanced cost of production due to the war, it was found necessary to reduce the book to a manageable size. To do this, we were reluctantly compelled to publish only the astral plane, hell, and the realm of half-belief. As these are set forth in full, it will not be necessary to deal with them here, but a few words may be devoted to the two higher realms. The realm of belief lacking in works, as depicted by J. B. P., is much brighter than the realm of half-belief, the light being as the light in England at about 8 a.m. on a summer's day. To this realm go all those whose faith was strong, but narrow and rather bigoted, and who failed, as many do, to act up fully to their beliefs. In the lowest division of this realm, the spirits are still strong believers in their own particular sect, and there is a marked tendency for them to remain there segregated into narrow communities. Their principal failings are self-complacency and an unwillingness to make any effort to progress higher, being often well satisfied with their surroundings. In the next division, the smaller differences between the sects tend to disappear, and a few broad communities take the place of the numerous narrow religions from which the individual spirits have risen. Those who have come up from the realm of half-belief, like J. B. P., do not drift into the narrow sects of the lowest division. They arrive freed of preconceived prejudices, and devote considerable attention to the study of the various faiths they find there, and endeavor to draw from each the vital truths which are enshrined in them. Some of the most interesting revelations J. B. P. made were that the gods exist, or, at any rate, the forms of the gods, and condescend to answer the prayers of their worshippers. In particular, he describes a service in a great Egyptian temple at which Osiris appeared. Similarly, he has visited a Hindu temple, where Kartikeya, the god of war, presided. He also gave a most striking account of a library in the realm of belief. These libraries are on so vast a scale that they look almost like cities. There are many of them, of course, but each is divided into three sections. The first contains the forms of books which have ceased to exist. I mean by this, the actual volumes themselves. Of course, all books do not come to us, many go to hell. The second section is very different, for in it the books are not the forms of books made on earth but those created here. The best way in which I can describe them is to compare them with picture books. In short, they contain ideas in picture form, and can be read by us just as the thought pictures of our friends can be understood by us. Few books are written for the first time over here in script. The third type are difficult to describe as books at all, for the picture idea has been carried out to its logical conclusion. The nearest thing to it on earth is the modern picture palace. Imagine a large room, at one end is a kind of stage, on which perform what at first sight appear to be real men and women. These are thought forms, strongly visualized by the committee of scholars in charge of the room. Thus an episode in history will be enacted in all its detail before our eyes. His description should be compared with the account by the Aesir of a library in hell. The realm of belief shown forth in works is seldom attained immediately after death. Thus to reach it a man must have been not only endowed with a strong faith, but must have risen above any narrowness of spirit, and, moreover, have lived a life full of love of his fellow men. His faith must have been shown forth in good works. Indeed, those who so attain it may well be considered to have been saints on earth. To this realm the spirits after death rise, but often by slow degrees, and once there, must remain a very considerable period. The light there is as the tropical sun at midday, and less advanced spirits would be unable to bear it. The development of the various religious beliefs towards unity is set forth plainly in the plan contained in this work, but it should be borne in mind that this unity is attained not by watering down all faiths to one nebulous creed, but by the absorption into one community of all the facets of truth which each faith held, while what is false is shed. The spirits in this plane devote themselves very largely to helping their fellow men, especially in hell, and continuously journey down to that place to save those who are in bondage. The monk Ambrose, who died in the 14th century, devoted most of his life to this work, and at length obtained his desire, and passed through the wall of fire and was lost to us. Animal lovers will be glad to know that his faithful dog followed him through the wall of fire. With him passed also the spirit of a woman whom he had always loved, but being a monk could never marry on earth. They passed through the wall of fire, or light, as it was described, to the mystic union of soul with soul, which it is understood takes place in the regions which lie beyond the wall of fire. What is this great wall of fire which cuts off the sixth or spirit plane from that which lies beyond? I am unable to answer this question. By some of the spirits it is called the second death, although this phrase is also employed to describe the transference from the astral to the spirit plane. We are told that some of the spirits fear it as men fear mortal death, but whereas death comes whether we wish it or not in its due course, this second death takes place only when the spirit is ready and anxious to pass on. It appears to affect the form, which seems to pass more completely under the control of the entity, but the entity itself is not destroyed. This was made clear by an angelic form who guarded the entrance leading from the realm of belief lacking in works to the highest realm. For when J.B.P. questioned him on this point, he informed him that he had passed through the wall of fire long before, and had now returned to labor on the sixth plane, adding, "But on this plane forms are needed, and therefore we assume one. This is not my original form, it is not the form of an earthly man, but that of an angel. I created by willing so to do. As I think myself, so I assume a form. If I desired I could assume the form of an animal or of a flame. Behold. J. B. P. Before my eyes he took the form of a great flame, the pillar of fire. I cried. As I spoke he seemed to change at once, and became like a cloud. Then the cloud became all light, and once more I saw him in his angel shape. Cannot evil spirits also do this? I inquired. The officer has described something similar. Those spirits whom you call devils can, but I may allow you to probe no deeper into these mysteries as yet, he replied. This angelic being, while refusing to give any details of what lay beyond the wall, yet stated emphatically that the personal entity was not destroyed, though the form was affected. Beyond this I have been unable to obtain any information. The spirits on the sixth plane do not know, and the guardian spirits who come thither from the higher planes refuse to speak. Some people believe that on passing the wall of fire, the spirit returns to earth in a fresh incarnation, but while this is probably the case with some, I am doubtful whether it covers all. We are informed that there are seven planes in all. This work deals with the two lowest only. And since these higher planes must be peopled, it appears more likely that the most exalted spirits rise higher and higher without the need of reincarnation, whereas more lowly spirits need to return to earth to develop certain characteristics. As to the difficulty of obtaining information from these higher planes, it seems probable that if received it would be so far above the heads of us mortals that we should be unable to comprehend it. Even the highest realm of the spirit plane is so exalted that the monk declared that much of the information he could give would be beyond us on earth, and therefore devoted most of his narrative to accounts of his missionary work in hell. I am still continuing my investigations into life beyond the grave, and if this book should prove acceptable, hope at no distant date to publish a second volume containing an account of the two remaining realms, and a more detailed description of life on the astral plane. Since the death of my brother in the trenches of Flanders, I have devoted most of my attention to conditions on that plane, and especially to the spirits of those who have died in battle. Their state is somewhat abnormal, and indeed the whole astral plane is greatly disturbed. My brother is now engaged in making a survey, as it were, of that plane, and is being assisted in his task by H.J. L. If any reader has a question on life beyond the grave to which he desires an answer, I would endeavor to obtain it, but wish it to be plainly understood that I do not mean thereby that I will endeavor to trace any particular persons, nor to obtain messages from them. To do so is not my object. As an example of what is required, I was asked to make inquiries as to the fate of animals after death. and the result is seen in this book. As to what opinion the reader will form of the present work, I know not, but, for myself, I have been profoundly impressed with the reality and the reasonableness of what I have seen and what the spirits have related of life beyond the grave. J. S. M. Ward. Chapter 1, The Doorway Opens. I, J. S. M. Ward, had a vision early in December, 1913, in which I learnt of the death of H. J. L., my uncle and father-in-law. The vision began with a message that he had died suddenly, and went on with the funeral, at which I was present. The sensations of grief, and the remarks and actions of the other mourners, were vividly impressed on my mind. When I awoke and later informed Carrie, my wife, we decided to go down and see him when up in town, but unfortunately Carrie was not well enough to go on the day we had selected. On January 5th, H. J. L.'s birthday, we received about 10:15 a telegram to say H. J. L. had suddenly died. All the sensations of grief that I had felt in my dream were repeated exactly, as were the incidents of the funeral. Even his face in his coffin looked like the one I had seen in my dream. It differed considerably from his face when alive. He was buried on January 8, 1914. First transvision. During the night of Monday, January 2th, that is 1 week after his death on January 5th, at 9 a.m. I dreamt I saw Uncle like, and yet unlike, he was before he died, something between what I remember him as before, and what he looked like after death. He said, "I have been trying to speak to Carrie, but can't, so I have come to you. Tell her I am alive, more alive than before I died, that I am mentally clearer than I was for some time before I died. But here I have had to set to work to learn, as if I were a child again, much of what I should have learnt on earth. I am with those who did just believe, but had not much real belief. Tell Carrie this. It was lucky for me that I did believe to a certain extent, as otherwise I should have been with the set who are below us, that is those who did not believe. I used to say it did not matter much what a man believed, but I am learning I was wrong. It makes a big difference, at any rate at starting. The set above us are those who believed but did not fully act up to their beliefs. J. W., what do you mean by these sets? H. J. L. After I died I found we joined that set of people to which we naturally belong, that is, those who hold the same sort of belief or unbelief. We have a teacher, somewhat like the angels of the Parsons, but they, the teachers, Ed, don't look a bit like the silly pictures you usually see. This teacher instructs us in what we are lacking, and when that lack has been made good, we move on to the next set, which includes many more different people than our own. We get very bored with meeting only those who think exactly like we did. There is much more variety in the next set. J. W. What is that set? L. Those who believed, but did not fully act up to their beliefs. W. Is there heaven, hell, and purgatory? H. J. L. I do not know whether there is a hell. You see, I know nothing at all save about my own set, and the ones above and below. There are plenty of old friends I expected to see and have not, but, of course, they may be and probably are only in another set. Those who did not believe are in the set below, after a time they come to us. As to purgatory, that corresponds roughly to where we all are, only it's more a place of learning than of punishment. Still, we are punished, because I can't help regretting the time I wasted on earth which would have got me into a more congenial set. We all, strange to say, are rather lonely here. We are too much alike to be companions, and want to get on, so as to meet our old friends, who, we believe, are in other sets. I am learning, but it's slow work. I feel like a schoolboy again. It's funny, I died on my birthday and was really born here on it. J. W. Did you know anything of your funeral? H. J. L. Yes, I saw myself lying dead, and saw you come and look at me. Be sure and tell Carrie what I said, that it saves a lot of time if you do believe, and that we do live after death. I am very glad I believed as much as I did, and I wish I had believed more. J. W. Would you go back if you could? H. J. L. No, certainly not. I am much happier here. I am making progress. However, I must be off now. It seems a funny thing to say to a schoolmaster, but I have to begin my schooling all over again. End of vision. J. W. Second vision, January 20, 1914. During the night of January 19, 1914, I again dreamt in a trance that I saw H. J. L. J. W. How are things going on with you? L. Well, but slowly. W. We wanted to ask you some questions. L. Fire away. I don't know that I shall be able to answer them. W. Where are you? Do you come to me from somewhere else? H. J. L. Not exactly. I am here all the time. Our world impinges on yours. I hate similes, but I can best explain it by one. You know those Pepper's ghosts? Well, it is as if we were thrown onto your stage, our scenery, and our characters walking about you, but unseen by you. Just as a real man on such a stage would hot see the phantoms which surrounded him, but the audience sees both him and them. Or like a bank of clouds which blends into a range of hills, so that it is hard to say which are hills and which clouds. We are in the same world as you, but not subject to the same laws. For example, time and space don't exist. This sounds right, and so it is. For the truth usually is right, because it's true, and therefore always has existed. J. W. But you are here now. How, then, can there be no space? H. J. L. Compare us to a thought. We are more than a thought, for we continue to think, but compare us to a thought. You may then get some idea of what I mean. When on earth you think Ravenscroft, your mind calls up a picture of Ravenscroft and the people there. You see them as they were. To that extent we and you are alike, but your finer senses are controlled by your body and you are unaware of what changes may be taking place. Now, you know something of telepathy. Do you remember my telling the story of the only true ghost story which the Psychical Society got, the one sent by the doctor? J. W. Yes, I do. H. J. L. Well, after that I said, I think most of that stuff's rubbish, but there may be something in telepathy. J. W. I remember perfectly. H. J. L. Well, Jack, there's not only something but almost everything in telepathy. It's the outer edge of those faculties which we have to develop here. It's the main link between our world and yours. You know that some people have learned of things which are happening to their friends at a distance. We all can do so here, and that is the way we communicate with each other. Speech does not exist with us. This explains those sayings in the Bible about nothing shall be hid. You cannot tell lies here or be deceived. But that is not all, for every separate thought exists of itself and we can see them all. This explains the doctrine of the Catholics, at which I used to laugh, that a really evil thought, such as murder, is worse than a venial sin. My punishment consists largely of this, that all my evil deeds and thoughts rise up before me in as real a shape as I myself possess. They are there with all the surrounding impedimenta. J. W. What do you mean by that? H. J. L. Well, Jack, I don't want you to think worse of me, so instead of quoting a real offense, I'll show you what I mean by a fictitious one. Suppose a man committed a murder, or even meditated one, right merely the actual murder, but all the surrounding details, such as the furniture and room in which it was, or was intended to be committed, are here. J. W. Then do you mean to say that there is no difference between the fault thought of and one committed? H. J. L. It all depends on the reason why it was not. Supposing your better nature gains the upper hand and you refuse to act as your lower nature prompts you, then, after seeing the evil thought, you will be refreshed by seeing the good one, for all your good deeds and thoughts come here also. If the sin had not been committed solely because you were prevented by something else, then there would be no good thought to refresh your weary spirit. Of course a man may be temporarily prevented from giving way to an evil passion, and afterwards rejoice that it should have been so, All that he will see here.